Hello, and welcome to episode 107 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the comic series The Red Mask from Mars, and as always, I'm joined by comic artist, writer, and creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man who time forgot, it's Tony Esmond.
Yeah, by now people will realise I've been announced as the next Doctor Who.
You have, and I can't wait for the series.
Yeah. It's a bold decision.
I think so. It's a brave decision for them to make. Yeah. To have someone who is just really shit at acting to play it. But then again, we had Sylvester McCoy, didn't we, I suppose? So,
yeah. Oh, dear.
Bring on the hate mail. Bring it on.
Well, you know, screw the hate mail, because... You know, do we talk a little bit about Doctor Who right now? Let's just cover it briefly.
Okay.
Obviously, the new Doctor Who is going to be a woman, and I'm like, good, bring it on.
All I want as a Doctor Who fan from Pertwee, all I want is good stories and a good actor.
Exactly.
Now it's too early for people to be fucking losing their shit about this being an outrageous choice until we see the woman actually act.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tony, that outrage has already happened. It's way too late for that.
I know.
People are saying this is the best thing since Jesus Christ, and other people are saying this is the worst thing since sliced bread.
How weird that the fan community goes mental like that about something. Yeah. You'd think there was other things going on in the world that might need something to worry about them. Do you know what I mean? But
I know.
To be fair, I just kind of like was somewhere in the middle, just not indifferent, but it's like, okay.
Just
we'll take it as it comes.
I mean,
it's good.
Yeah, I haven't watched Doctor Who, really, for years, you know. I'm not a massive Who fan. I could have mentioned the band then. But the way I see it is this, I'm like, right, I'm interested, get me with the actual series, you know.
Yeah.
You got the perfect...
It needs to be good. I'm a huge Doctor Who fan. I've read 300 novels. I've watched every old episode of the TV series.
You know.
And it is. And I know, it's terrible, isn't it? And I absolutely love Capaldi as an actor, but I don't think he was serviced well enough.
No.
I think he could have been an amazing Doctor Who, but what he was given wasn't.
Yeah, I think I agree there. And I just want the series to be good.
Yeah.
You know?
I would love for this series to be
crazy.
The Doctor being followed round by a 20-year-old hunky man. Come on, let's have a bit of equality.
This may require me to bring back the DVD that I have on my shelf here, Doctor Screw in the TARDIS. Maybe watch that.
You had to do it, didn't you?
Presume they'll be eyeing up a sequel. The long-awaited Doctor Screw 2.
I'll need a little sleep first. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, dear. But I tell you what, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Good luck to him.
Yeah.
I'm all for a good TV series.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen her in much. When they said it was that woman out of Broadchurch, I thought, oh, good, it's that woman from... Who's the other one? The main actor.
Peep Show.
Yeah, that lady from Peep Show. And I think she's quite... I thought, good, it's her. And then I thought, I didn't even know she was in Broadchurch. So when I haven't seen her in St. Trinian's or something. But
She was in Attack the Block. Have you seen Attack the Block?
Yeah.
No, I watched the first 5 minutes. It annoyed me, but I haven't seen
it. I thought it was going to be that Chris Marshall guy, so kind of...
Yeah, I'm quite pleased to say
I'd rather... If it was a baked turd, I'd have been happier than him doing it.
Oh, that's like just like it encapsulates the internet to certain angles, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Let's start a baked turd for... what about the captain of the next Enterprise or something
Dr.
like that?
Dr. Pooh writes itself.
Oh, my God. Dan Butcher's wordplay strikes again. Love it. Love it.
Somebody said to me yesterday, Dan may be the funniest person I know, and I think just that proves it.
You got a small circle of friends.
have we said happy birthday for tomorrow yet? We haven't, have we?
No, we
happy
haven't.
Tomorrow, mate.
You can't see me right now, but I'm blushing. Thank you. Yeah, by this time this show goes out, I would have been 40 years old. I can't believe it.
Behind you,
So
let's ask.
Your balls have started sagging like a big bag of coins.
Yeah. When you get in the bath, they float like those barrels in Jaws.
So when they start moving independently, that's when you got to worry.
Start the comb over early. My suggestion is make it look like you got a side parting early, so the comb over isn't so obvious in a couple of years' time.
So, I mean, Dan, happy birthday!
Yeah,
thank you.
My present arrived yet, by the way.
No, there's nothing in the post.
tomorrow then. Yeah, good.
Fingers crossed.
I need to ask the important question. You've been on this earth 40 years. Was it worth it?
Yeah, I reckon so.
It's a moment, isn't it? It's made
it
worth it.
The last thing I expected was a genuine answer.
I was sort of expecting to go to about 80, so we're kind of at the halfway mark.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Midlife crisis time. Brilliant. We're going to witness that live on the Awesome Comics podcast for the next 3 months.
Let's get some female guests on, like in their 20s, and you can just sort of hit on them like a sleazy 40-something or old. Yeah.
You can, like,
you know, like I do. Like how I do it. Yeah.
You can say,
follow your lead.
Sorry I'm late to the show, guys. I was driving my Ferrari.
Yeah, I was just getting my balls whacked. I was getting my anus bleached.
Oh,
Lord.
Oh. Oh, dear. Anyway, it's a serious show this week.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
We've gone highbrow.
Yes, we are. Well, kind of.
Yeah.
Yes, as we've been saying on social media, etc., this particular show is all about European comics. Mm. It's a topic that we've been bringing up quite a few times in our recommendations, haven't we, Tony?
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
So, and we were
today.
Yeah, and we were very lucky to have Jerome from Cinebook come up, join us for a chat about his work, which is fascinating, actually. Because he's translated quite a few books in his time. So, without further ado, we've got the who and the poo jokes out of the way. Now it's time for the serious meat of the episode. So, here you go. Here's the chat about European comics. We hope you enjoy it and learn something. I know I did. So I've got a big list of things that I need to...
Yeah, apologies in advance, because my technical goes just up the toilet. So I disappear halfway through. But don't write in saying, was Tony bored and went off to masturbate or something. I'm actually... I had some real technical problems. And it's a real shame I missed it, because I was saying to you guys, I've literally got about 30 cine books in front of me.
Yeah.
And Jerome's translated nearly all of them.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love them.
Yeah.
And I'm so pissed off. But hopefully we'll get him back on, won't we?
Yeah, we'll definitely get him back on. He was a cracking guest. So here it is for you lovely listeners. Check out this week's topic, European comics. So this week we're focusing on the vast world of European comics. And to help us is someone who's translated some of the best books that have graced the shelves of comic stores. It's our pleasure to welcome Cinebook's very own. Now, he told me how to say this before the show, but I'm going to murder it anyway. It's Jerome Saint-Quentin to the show. Was that good?
That's excellent. Very good pronunciation.
Hey, what up, it?
Oh, that's a first. That's a first. I'll tell you. Thank you very much for joining us, Jerome.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Wow. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
I know you work with Cinebook, and you've translated quite a few titles in your time, haven't you?
I think the last count was around 320-something.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
I knew it was a lot, but I didn't realise it was that. I know I've got a few Cinebooks sitting in front of me, actually, and every time I seem to have opened up the cover, your name's been there.
I've been the only translator for 4 years approximately, and then we hired someone else about 2 years ago. So I'm finally starting to not be the only one in it anymore.
Okay.
So you're having a little bit of a break, or are Cinebook publishing more now?
No, we're publishing more. That's all.
Oh, right. So there's no let up. You're still as busy as ever, then. Really?
Yeah, pretty much.
Now we'll get into more of those books that he's been translating a bit. Now, for those of you who've been listening over the past few months, you've probably noticed the appearance of more than a few European comics in the recommendation part of this show. That's one of the big reasons for this particular topic existing. Now, there's one simple reason for this. Now, those are some of the best books you will find on the stands, on digital, and anywhere. Now, from high concept hard sci-fi to political intrigue, historical epics, or even like beautifully written family comedies or dramas, there's something for absolutely any comics fan. And to be honest, the quality is second to none. I know certainly my eyes, I've always wanted to get into, you know, read more of the European books, like, you know, from Cinebook, etc. But it's where to start, you know, what sort of thing do you like? And since starting the show, and more about process, what is it like for the people who are actually working on these books, and like Jerome, who are translating
So many titles. I still can't believe he's done that many titles. Yes.
I still don't believe it myself. Don't worry. It's...
Really. So, now, what's the best way to start? Like the actual sort of European graphic novel market itself, it's vast, and anyone who's been, you know, to continental Europe and has been into bookstores or comic stores or whatever, has seen that it's something that's treated not as like it's a serious business, and there's such a level of respect and that goes into it, you know, from fans to the creators alike. And I know when I was in Brussels once, and I was in a sort of book section of Waterstones, and I'm so used to seeing in England, I'm so used to seeing a small section of graphic novels. Don't you like this, Dan? There's a small sort of section, and there's not that many people sort of hanging around, but, you know. So, but you go to continental Europe, and that book section is huge, absolutely ginormous. But where do you start with that? You know, when that's on offer, you know, where could
it can be a bit daunting?
Yeah, it can be daunting, but I think the reward is there for anyone who wants to dip their toe into this. So hopefully this show will give you even more titles to add to your pull list and your shopping list. I know my Amazon wish list is quite massive, so it's only going to get worse. This week. So let's start, I guess, with one of the biggies that I know is something that I haven't really read until fairly recently, or started to read, and it's one that a lot of people are going to hear more about. And Jerome actually worked on the translation, and we're of course talking about Valerian. Now, for someone who hasn't read a lot of the European books, the volume one, the nice hardcover that Sydney Book have put out, that collects three volumes, doesn't it, Jerome? I think that's
yes, it does. Yeah,
yeah. Is that the first three books of Valerian?
It collects number one and two, yeah, which were the first two to be published as full albums.
Yeah,
and then it collects volume zero, which was the first to be published in the magazine Pilot at the time. Pilot, sorry, proper pronunciation, and was only published as an album, I don't know, 10 years, 12 years later. But it is the very first adventure of the characters.
Yeah. It's okay. Like, is it 1967, I believe? It's
67, yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's a series that obviously, I think with the movie coming out, a lot more people, certainly from the UK and the US, are going to be discovering. And the new book is absolutely stunning.
I presume there being a lot more shops to kind of people to get at it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, how is the sort of cine book side of things for Valerian at the moment? Is there going to be a huge push for it, I'd imagine?
We've done what we can. We're not a huge company. We're not DC or anything. Or we're not even Dargo, the original French publisher. Mm. So we've done what pushing we could.
Yeah.
And we've hiked our wagons to the other trains, the movie train and Dargo's train. But we've done what we could, but hitched the wagon.
Yeah.
Sorry. See, that's the kind of problems that you get when you're a translator. Suddenly you realize you've said something stupid, and then you correct yourself.
No, that's fine.
Sorry about that.
No, anyone who's listened to this show knows that there's far more stupid stuff. Yeah, there's far more stupid stuff.
And we probably will.
Yeah. So,
all right then. but yeah, we've pushed as much as we could, and we've massively increased our sales. Let's face it.
Yeah.
Valerian could be for us, could be for all European comics, what I think Akira was for manga in Western Europe. Mm. Like when that movie came out in France, in England, in America, people just realized, wow, there's a huge world of available stuff from Japan out there, and anime just broke into the scene. We're really hoping that Valerian will do the same thing for BD, for European comics.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes, it would.
Manga still looms large over the industry today. Yeah. But that's not a bad thing. But it'd be great if it could be the same done with Valerian.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
Yeah. I mean, because there's such, you know, such imagination on show. When was the first time that you were introduced to that series?
Oh dear. my father used to collect them. He bought every album. I was born in 73. I learned to read around 4. So I'd say probably around 5.
Wow.
Nice, wow. Yeah.
I saw it around 5, but I became a fan around 8 or 9, more or less like the same way that Besson, Luc Besson did.
Yeah.
I have a very similar experience that he did, you know, waiting for the next album to come out and reading them as early as possible and then completely falling in love with Laureline, the female character. Exactly the same as him.
I've heard that's a reoccurring theme, that a lot of people fall in love with her.
She's quite the character. So yes, it's definitely a recurring theme.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly a world that, looking at the new book, it's astonishing how much that we've seen that has quite clearly, in some ways, been influenced by Valerian. You know, yes. I know in the beginning pages you've got images from Star Wars, etc. That, you know, when you put them side by side with panels of Valerian, it's almost like Valerian is a storyboard for Star Wars in some ways.
In some ways.
Yeah. So, I really do hope that, you know, that film, which looks astonishing. I think that looks amazing, that film.
Sam, did you see the trailer before?
Oh, I did, mate, yeah. Yeah. I saw it. I think it was on the Spider-Man 3D. It was on the trailers for that, I think.
Yeah.
But you
didn't
get to see it, Vince.
I did not get to see it. I was really upset because I wanted to see, I've seen it like on my TV at home, but to see it on the big screen must have been amazing.
It does look very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Yeah. I know in New York last year they had some of the models from it on show. Some of the sort of creature effects model things, which looked amazing. Yeah, looked really good.
Yeah.
So Jerome, have you seen the in comparison to how the comic is to the film, is it accurately represented?
Well, what I've seen, unfortunately, I haven't been invited to any preview or anything. Yeah, I'm very cross with Luc Besson about that. but from what I've seen from the trailer, from a few pictures, there was a display. There were some props as well on display at the Angoulême Comic Festival this year. So we saw a bit of the costumes and stuff like that. It looks, the aliens look quite similar. The costumes have been maybe a little bit updated, and there's that definite Besson touch of madness about them.
Yeah,
which is good.
Right.
Yeah. While it's not an absolute exact reproduction, I think it really captured the essence of the exuberance of the style, the imagination that's behind it. I think that at least is bang on.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah. Which is what it has to be, doesn't it? Really, I mean, because as fans, we have to realise that they can't possibly do everything exactly how it is in the book. They have to. There has to be certain creative liberties, but I think as long as the characters and the story are faithful to the original, there's not too much we can really complain about. So yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of our listeners who have seen those trailers and are wondering what this book is about. And it is, it's how many albums of this have there been of Valerian in total?
23 plus 0 plus another of short story, a collection of short stories.
Yeah.
Apologies. So 25 so far.
Wow.
25.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, to me, the artwork is a little. I mean, I'm sure you French have a much more beautiful way of putting it, but it's much more sort of cartoony compared to the movie, isn't it? There's a sort of caricature element to the art in this, isn't there? Would you say?
The original albums, the 0, 1, 2, maybe even 3, were a lot more cartoony than they became afterwards. Style became a bit more. I don't really know how to call it, but less cartoony.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it is still a comic. It's not Aline Claire. It's not Hergé. It's not anything like that. So yeah, it will always be a little bit cartoony.
Yeah. What's your favorite part of that sort of world? Because there's so much of Valerian to choose from, isn't there? Because there's just so much imagination on show. But what do you think is your favorite part of it?
Favorite album or just favorite
What brings you to that world, that universe itself?
It's a bit of the fact that there is everything. You know, it's the fact that there is a little bit of time travel, a little bit of space travel. There's diplomacy. There's politics. There's exploration. When I open, before I think read them all, but when I opened a new Valerian story, I would never know exactly what would be in it. There would be something new every time. That was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at this book, you know, you see pages where he's riding a horse, and then like 20 pages later, they'll be in spaceships and there's huge cityscapes, and you know, it's just everything on show. So there must be so much buzz for this at the moment. I mean, I'm certainly looking forward to getting stuck into it more. I mean, is sci-fi?
Yeah, you could never describe it as decompressed storytelling, could you?
Oh God, no. And you do find that with a lot of I keep saying European books. But is that a simplification of it, really? Is it...
You can say Franco-Belgian, French-Belgian. Yeah. Don't say just French, because that's insulting to Belgium. And don't say just Belgium, because that's insulting to us.
Yeah.
But European is fine. European is fine.
Right? Yeah. What's your favorite genre to work at? Because obviously you've translated quite a few. And, you know, from the likes of... like Orbital, which is one of the faves that I've read, actually. I love the Orbital series.
It is brilliant.
That's just, you know, I'll get onto all that in a minute. You also, is it Long John Silver? Is that another one you
wrote on? Yes, that was my absolute favourite of the new series that I worked on.
Yeah.
Some of those series I grew up reading. Lucky Luke and Valerian and Yoko Tsuno. They're series that I pretty much learned to read reading those books.
Yeah.
So I have a different relationship with them. They're part of everything I am. But Long John Silver, I discovered when we acquired the rights and I got to be the one who translated it. It's unbelievable. It's fantastic. The art is gorgeous. The characters are striking and well written, and the adventure is perfect.
Yeah.
And it's a pirate story, which I love.
Yeah.
So I had a blast. Absolute blast.
So in regards to translating, you first get the comic in its native language, and it's like, okay, Jerome, we want you to translate this to English. You do so. Does that go back to the author or the creators in any way, or do they just trust your judgment that's you've captured what was trying to be said?
Technically, most of them, the authors don't have anything to do with them.
Right,
we acquire the rights from the publisher.
Right.
We acquire the rights to publish it in English. We do the translation. I don't know. Maybe some of them are checked by the publisher, but I'm not sure. Mm. But most of the authors never see it. I know for a fact that Van Ham, Jean Van Ham, who writes things like 13 and Largo Winch.
Yes,
Lament the Lost Mortal. It is the huge name of French Belgian comics. He checks because I know he speaks enough English that he wants to see the stuff. I know that Christin and Mézières, the authors of Valerian, have seen a few. Maybe not for checking, but just looking at them. But most of the authors they don't really have a.
Okay, so once they've kind of the publisher takes it over and they commission the translation, etc.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
So, I mean, that sort of translation process, because obviously, when things are translated in different languages, there could be more words, there could be less words. How difficult is it to keep the? Because I'm guessing that the size of the speech bubbles doesn't change, or does it?
Extremely rarely. We will expand the speech bubble when we really are stuck, absolutely stuck on something. But most of the time, we just have to work around it. We have to move the meaning of one sentence to the next bubble and make it a bit shorter on the first one. We cheat with expressions.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. It's fun.
Yeah, I can imagine it being a real challenge. Very difficult at times because... like you say, you've got a confined space. It's like this, the message has to be put into here.
Yeah.
And then, it's very, very skilled thing to do that.
Well, don't take me wrong. I'm not translating Shakespeare or anything like that.
No.
I'm not putting myself a pro on anything of that caliber. But yeah, it has its own set of challenges. When you translate it to comic, most of the stuff is going to be dialogue.
Yeah.
So you have to try to make it snappy.
Yeah.
And that means you have to have a solid knowledge of colloquial English, in this case. Not just, you know, the school English. You have to have been in the country and have learned expressions and be able to use them the way you would use them if you spoke with people in the street. So it's a little, slightly different set of skills needed. And there's the whole speech bubble size challenge as well.
Yeah. So do you translate it and then there is a letterer that then takes those words and then fix it? Do you work alongside a letterer when you're doing that?
The way we do it is I do the main translation.
Yeah.
Then it is checked by an editor who is a native speaker, either English or American. It comes back to me after a few changes and a few suggestions, goes back to her, back to me, back, etc., until everybody's satisfied.
Yeah.
And then it goes to the letterer, and I basically don't see it again until it's done.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah, still quite a few processes. So, but do you type the whole thing out like a script? You're writing it fresh, and then it goes, people are just looking at the words? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The thing is all of this that people who are reading the translations don't necessarily take into account, because it's a lot of work. Because these books as well, they are not they're not simple books. You know, that's the beauty of them. There's high political intrigue. There's a lot of dialogue. You know,
a lot of high concepts.
Yeah,
very much so. You know, what is? Here's a question for you. What is the most difficult translation you've had to do so far?
Blake and Mortimer.
That was pretty quick.
it's my nightmare. I love the series. I actually love the series. It's fun. It's really enjoyable, and the characters are fun. But it is, as most reviewers will tell you after reading a few of them, it's blocks of text. It's lots and lots of exposition, of narration, of dialogue. And it's all 1950s British English.
Oh, right.
I'm more of either Irish or American contemporary specialist. Yeah. So it's an absolute nightmare translating that thing. But I do enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us a bit, what for those who may not know, what is that book about?
Blake and Mortimer?
Yeah.
So it's written by Edgar P. Jacobs, who was a student of Hergé, the author of Tintin.
Yeah.
Who actually worked with him on Tintin. So same style, same Linclair style of art.
Yeah. And if anyone out there doesn't know Hergé, you probably shouldn't be listening to this show. Let's be honest.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
The two characters are one Philip Mortimer, who's a physicist, among other things, and Colonel or Captain, or we're never quite sure what his rank is, Blake, Francis Blake, who's head of the MI5. It goes from the end of the Second World War to somewhere in the early 60s. Goes back and forth because there's no really real continuity. And they have weird adventures that are either spy stories or science fiction stuff. I mean, they visit Atlantis, they go back in time, they go forward in time. They've done quite a lot of things. They found the 30 pieces of silver paid to Judas. It's good old pulp adventure.
Yeah.
And it's very British, but written by a Belgian.
Oh. So, with that in mind, did you have to do a lot of work on the translation to get that quite right?
Yeah, it's... I have to do a lot of effort myself to get the British English right.
Yeah.
And fortunately, my editor is there to catch my many mistakes.
Yeah. Your editor's based in Canterbury. Is that what you said there?
The company is based in Canterbury. My editors, one is in California, and one is in Birmingham, I think.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we go to whoever is most relevant to the style of English that we're translating, basically. Like Buck Denny is about a U.S. Air Force pilot, so obviously we go to the editor in California.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing.
that is quite
I didn't
amazing.
Really think it was quite so global. I thought it was just kind of like an office somewhere. And
We are far-reaching. We are like an octopus.
But that sounds quite sinister when you say it like that.
Yeah, it's like an octopus with, what, three limbs so far. But...
So how did you get into the role of being a translator then? How did it all start?
I was looking for a very specific title of the Looky Luke series to buy to my roommates at the time in Ireland, who were Californians themselves. And I discovered this company, Cinebook, which was fairly new at the time, and found out that they were doing Looky Luke. They didn't have the title I wanted, so I fired an email to them saying, you know, are you going to translate it soon, and when, and can you tell me, etc. And then, as a complete afterthought, I said, oh, and by the way, I'm a translator. Here's an example online of the kind of work I can do in English. If by any chance you need work, give me a call. A month later, I translated my first comic.
Wow.
Pure, unadulterated luck.
Wow. So what was the first one that they got you to do?
It was book 3 of Yoko Tsuno, The Prey and the Ghost.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Was that a trial by fire, or was that a joy and easy to do?
A bit of both. Yoko Tsuno is one of my oldest favorite comic. I absolutely love that series. And obviously it was my first comic book translated, so I was terrified of screwing it up and not getting the job. But apparently I did okay. And a couple of months later, I was lucky enough to receive a book with my name inside the cover.
That was
fantastic.
And now you've got quite a few of those books, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So
that's going to be one of the big perks.
I'm really running out of shelf space.
Ah. Well, we all know what that's like. So. So what would you say is the sort of time? I mean, how long does it take to translate a book? Would you say? I mean, obviously, I guess it varies from book to book. But I guess when you're given a project, are you given a deadline that you have to work to?
We've never had to work through an absolute final deadline. Or we have a very good relationship in the company, so we know, you know, this has to be done fairly quickly. I know in advance when we're supposed to publish the books.
Right.
So obviously, I know how far earlier I have to turn them in, basically. Usually, comic will take me about a week, on average. Like a Blake and Mortimer will take me 3 weeks. that's a given. Everybody knows it, so we work around it. Simpler comics like Yakari, that's for kids, so a lot less talk and text. I've done one in one day, but that was unexpected.
What was that day like? Was that 24 hours just nonstop work, or was it quite easy?
It was about 6 hours, I think.
Oh wow. What book was that?
That's a fair bit of work.
Yakari, I don't know, one of the mid series. I couldn't tell you exactly which one.
Oh wow.
So kind of go on, Vince.
No, you go, Dan.
I was going to say, kind of, or what books are you reading at the moment you'd recommend to listeners?
I haven't been reading much in the way of comics since I started working in comics.
I find that's a common theme. For the people that work full-time in comics, they don't have that much time to read comics, understandably.
Yeah, so. And there's also the fact that, you know, you kind of want to do something outside of what you're doing every day.
Yeah.
So read a book, read a novel, or yeah, something else. But I mean, I keep going through the series I started, but many of them I actually translate now. So I can give you a few pointers, but they're going to be, you know, how can I put that? I'm going to be tooting my own horn, basically, or the company's horn.
Well, that's why you're here.
Yeah. All right, then.
So for those people that want to try out some European comics, what titles do you think that Cinebook are putting out that are quite, what's the best way to say it, easy to pick up, you know, that won't be, you know, a good introduction to those sort of books?
I would say... let me see if I can work something out. I would start with Alone. It's a series about five kids who wake up one morning in a city that is entirely empty. It's just them left. And they try, first of all, to survive and then to figure out what on earth happened.
That's a simple setup, but immediately you know where you are. Yeah,
it's extremely elegant. It's very well done. It's never either childish nor over the top, dramatic or anything like that. You're always at the level of kids, but it's never just for kids. An adult reading that will find some fantastic things to read. It's really, really a good series, and I quite enjoy both reading it and working on it.
Because I guess you have to read a series and then reread it and then translate it at the same time, I'm guessing. A lot of these titles you're seeing for the first time.
Yeah, it helps when you read in advance to not muck up a character's name or something, or know where you're going, stuff like that. And of course, when you're translating something that's entirely new, you want to feel for the series, the characters' personalities and idiosyncrasies, everything.
Can it be quite tricky if there's a fictional item or group or person mentioned in the books, and say you're new to the series and it's got a big back catalogue? I'd imagine that could be quite tricky at some points. Say like Superman and Kryptonite, and the first time you've read this book, you said, "Right, okay, what the hell's this word mean?"
Yeah, that's when you start having to do a lot of research.
Yeah,
you have to read the back. If you find something like that, you have two choices: you either translate without looking, and you're going to do a very crappy
bad job,
basically,
yeah,
or you read the back catalog, and that can take a while.
Can you just jump online and look at a Wikipedia? Would that help you out, or do you really need to go back through all the books?
The thing is, if you want to do it right, you got to read the books, because that's better always. Because Wikipedia is not 100% reliable, or so I've heard. But the thing also is, if you're looking for information on Superman or Batman, go to Wikipedia and you're going to find pages and pages of stuff. If you're looking for information on European comics, it's a little bit harder. We're not
quite as
mad about Wikipedia as everybody else.
Yeah. What is the online presence like for a lot of these like French and Belgian books?
It's in Europe, it's there.
Mm.
But it's nothing quite as massive as American comics is.
Yeah,
it is for American comic. I mean, it's if you look for Asterix, if you look for Tintin, obviously you're going to find a lot of stuff.
Mm.
If you look for Lucky Luke, there's 75 volumes so far. So of course there is a presence as well, but it's not universal. It's not crazy. There aren't tons and tons of discussion boards of people fighting over this detail and that.
Yeah.
It's there, but
that's a blessing in some ways.
Yeah,
yeah, it can be, definitely.
Yeah, and also the creators just they just sort of they quietly just work away at these books, don't they, and just keep publishing these books. I guess a lot of certainly small press, and you see a lot of some of the bigger writers and creators, shall we say, that sometimes they're a bit more vocal on social media than they need to be. And
yeah,
yeah, was like, well, I'd rather you just make more comics, please.
I have the feeling that American, if we're talking about them, American creators are very much nerds themselves. So yeah. When they see a nerd fight, they can't help but join in.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, roll their sleeves up and get stuck in.
Yeah.
Yeah. The European creators are a little less like that. Because, like you said at the beginning, we take comics seriously. Yeah. They're considered a form of art, just like any other. It's normal literature.
Yeah.
So when you're a comic creator, even though at the moment there are a lot of problems because they're not well paid, and but that's, you know, normal. Normal, but it's work conditions in general. But they are considered artists, normal artists. They're not comic artists. They're artists. Yeah. So they have a behavior that's maybe more in accordance with regular artists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think here in the UK, there's such a cultural difference that to get it round to that way of thinking, if at all possible, would take generations to shift the perception of, like, because you'd be an insult saying, oh, that's a comic book.
Yeah.
And that would be used to denigrate a subject matter or a piece of art or film or whatever. And comic books are looked at very differently, as I'm sure you're aware over here. I would love them to get to the point that they're kind of revered in the same way as books are, but I don't think I'd see it in my lifetime.
No.
I'd love to, but...
It would be nice, but that is why Cinebook was created, you know, to preach the good word to you benighted heathens.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's totally... No. After the foolish decisions this country has made in the past...
Let's not here go we go. Here we go. Right. No, but it's true that, I mean, as soon as, like, your eyes are opened to, like, the European books, there's almost no going back. Do you know what I mean? I don't think you can dip your toe in, because the work on show is just so beautiful. And, like, it's just, I mean, I was speaking about Orbital before. And that is just, every page is just an absolute work of art. You know what I mean, you can just stare at the pages, and on top of that, you've got a big political story going on for something that is essentially quite science fiction. That is, you know, there's alien races and all kinds going on, but at its heart, I would say it's almost a political story, isn't it, Orbital?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, but you would find maybe with other comic publishers or in other countries, you know, they might take that that science fiction setting, and it might be a bit more blockbustery. You know, there might be more explosion, and there might be more giant monsters. You know, but I love that. You know, books like this, there's a real world building. You know, there's so much going on in every page, which just draws the reader in every time.
The very kind of American Western way of telling stories, like with three act structures. When I've read the European stuff, like when I used to kind of read the Japanese manga stuff, the kind of the story beats would be so different, and it was like a completely different sensation. And getting into European comics is getting that same sort of hit when it's like I have no clue what's going to happen when I turn this page, because it is so very different. In a good way, it's really refreshing.
What do you think, Jerome? What do you think your favourite sort of genre to work in? Do you like science fiction or?
I've always been a huge science fiction fan, so yeah it's usually my go-to genre. It's really where I feel the most at ease and most comfortable. But I do like others. I mean, a good military story and. Is fun. Pirate stories, like I said, although you have to do a lot of research into 18th century vocabulary and stuff like that.
That must have been pretty difficult to do.
God,
that.
Yeah.
You gotta do what you gotta do, you know? Yeah. it was fun. Speaking specifically of Long John Silver, I wanted to do the comic justice, so I dug in and I did a lot of research. And I hope I didn't get too many things wrong, but you know, getting the right name for the right ship, and what position is the sailor on the ship or something like that. You got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very true.
Because that could quite well let the book down.
Yeah.
The average comic lover will not like when you make a mistake, and we make it known.
Yeah.
So if we get something wrong, we usually hear about it.
Oh, have you?
At least their comic fans are vocal the world over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you? Has that happened that many times when people have gone over the top with their critique?
Over the top, not really. I mean, any critique that we've received, as I found, you've been usually mostly justified. We've been caught, for example, using American words instead of British words. Pavement.
Oh, really?
And sidewalk. I've let slip a few sidewalks in Blake and Mortimer, for example. That did not go well. but that's fair enough. That's their right to point at it and say, "Hey, you did something wrong," because we did. We should not have let that happen. That's the problem when you learn English from different countries. I've spent 2 years in America. I've spent 10 years in Ireland. I learned British English at school, so it's a bit of a jumble.
Yeah.
But when you hear something like that, it's a real mistake. Yeah, fair enough. You apologize, you say, "I learn," and you do learn. You make an effort afterwards. Occasionally, we've had a few people that pointed out, you know, "I would not have said it like that, and that's a bit weird." It's very rare, and we try not to take it too much to heart, while at the same time listening in case it's valid. But
it's relevant.
Yeah.
It's really subjective, though, isn't it?
Yeah. When it gets subjective, you know, okay, fair enough. That's not how you would have done it, but that's how I did it, and it works. So
what do you think the kind of the French comic book market is so healthy, and what potentially could we learn from it to kind of improve it over here?
The thing is, the comic book, the French comic book market is not 100% healthy.
Mm.
Like I said earlier, there are problems with authors and artists who are often underpaid, and many of them just give up because they can't make ends meet.
Yeah,
can't actually earn a living.
Mm.
It's that bad. And there's too much production, I think. Too many new titles.
Yeah.
And you know, not enough of a market, so not enough sales on most of them.
Tony was mentioning it was very fiercely competitive, and like if your book was up there and it wasn't selling, the store would have it down and another one in its place.
Yeah,
very quickly.
Pretty much. Very, very quickly. So it's a harsh world, unless you're one of the very established names like Valerian or Jean Van Ham, like I was saying earlier.
Mm.
If you're one of those names, you're fine.
Yeah.
If you're a beginner, if you're a new guy, it could go either way. But we do have the advantage, first of all, that comics are accepted as a form of literature.
Yeah.
I think it's one book in eight sold in France is a comic book.
Wow.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's really good.
That's a huge number. And so there's a lot of... a lot of respect for the media, the medium itself. So that's good, obviously. And the other thing is diversity. I think it's the main thing. It's extremely diverse. Many different styles, many different genres, many different ages targeted by this and that. Even if in our catalog we have stuff for adults, we have stuff for little kids, medium kids, teens. You can find everything.
Yeah.
You can find absolutely everything. And the fact that everything is on offer means that everyone can look at it and say, "Hey, that would be nice. I'll take that." And then when you dip your first toe and you have that first taste of it, you say, "Hey, maybe there's other stuff I could like."
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly, just the artwork alone, you know, we've said it, you know, we've brought titles to people's attention that, you know, you look at the artwork and, like, the US, for instance, if it was at Image Comics, people would be going insane over the, over, you know, the work that's on display.
Yeah.
But I guess in sort of France and beyond, it's just kind of every book has that sort of standard of quality, don't they? You know, so it's
well.
Oh, do you have opinions on this?
we select obviously the considering the amount of material that's available for translating, we do a thorough selection. So the stuff you see translated by us and translated by the other companies, we do that, like Titan. They're going to select stuff that really stands out, obviously. If you look at all the production in France, you're going to find some stuff that's not quite as beautiful. But, you know, if they don't compare in a, well enough, they're going to be pulled out very quickly. So
So we're lucky. Those people who read the translations, we're lucky enough to read the cream of the crop, as it were.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice to know.
Yeah.
Well, we try anyway.
Yeah. And there's more books than ever on offer, isn't there? Really. Do you have Cinebook? Do they do much digital? Do you know?
We do, actually. I think pretty much 90-95% of our catalog is available on digital now.
Oh, wow.
By Isneo.
I-Z-N-E-O. Tony uses that one.
They have their our catalog available in Europe. And they have a deal now with Comixology in America. And they should have most of the catalog available as well.
Yeah. I find that recently I've picked up a lot of, because there's more and more readers are doing digital these days. And I've certainly picked up a few from, whether it be Cinebook, Humanoids, or whoever. It's great to have it at that digital, because digital is a great way to, especially with the sort of size of the volumes that European books are, you know, you can just give it a trial, you know. And it's just, it's like drugs, isn't it? As soon as they get that little taste, they're hooked.
That first hit.
Yeah.
First taste is not quite free.
But I think that's great. I mean, how do the digital books do for Cinebook? Without talking about numbers, but is for European books on the whole, is digital a growing medium?
I'm not quite sure. this is not my area of expertise at all. I usually don't see the numbers. From what I heard, it's not huge.
Yeah.
It's growing, definitely.
How is it in France, then? Like, do many people you know, outside of comics, etc., are they only buying, like, hard copies, or do they actually read digital?
In France, most... maybe the really younger people... Mm. I mean, I'm 44, so, you know, I'm not really in touch with the new generation. But maybe some of them actually start buying digital books, if they buy them at all.
Mm.
But most of the people in my generation, or the generation just after, we love the books.
Yeah.
I don't do digital. I like having a book in my hand, especially for a comic book. Most of us are kind of traditionalists that way.
Yeah. I'm the same. I'm all about filling the bookshelves.
I do like that.
There's something great about having a tangible copy in your hands.
Yeah.
I think especially as... because the European books are bigger than you would say, you know, your US or UK comic book. You know, there's a lot more sort of art with the scale of it's better. It's better to see the artwork full size, isn't it, really, rather than doing it panel by panel.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons we did it. Most of our books come out in pretty much the A4 European format.
Mm.
We've shrunk a few of them. The 15 plus age range.
Mm.
Those books are a little bit smaller, but all the others they're big size.
Yeah. I've noticed. So I've got a couple in front of me here, like 13 and Clear Blue Tomorrows are slightly smaller than like Orbital and Long John Silver, as we say. So go on. Let's be honest. How many books do you have in your collection?
It's going to be a ridiculous amount, this.
It's going to be ridiculous.
Books or comic books?
Let's do comic books. I think it's still going to be a ridiculous number, but let's do that.
I have pretty much everything we've ever put out in English, so that's 400 and bits. And in French, I don't know, must be around 1,500.
What?
Christ.
Well, half of the collection is my father's, and I've kept it. So, yeah, I think that's we're about 1,500, up to 1,500 now.
So... Look, to all those people listening, Jerome is where we want to be with our bookshelves. That's what we're saying. He's the man to aspire to be.
Well, just keep in mind, bear in mind the fact that I have bookshelves in my apartment, yeah, in my mother's house, and she's constantly complaining about that. It can't be a problem.
Yeah.
I've got a boxes of books up in my parents' loft that they keep on reminding me about.
Yeah,
and it's like I've got no more room in my house for books. I've got shelves and shelves of them.
Yeah. And Joe,
the struggle is real.
Yeah, Joe always says to me whenever a new book comes through the post, she's like, "Another book? You're running out of space."
So you get it delivered to work and then just smuggle it home. That's the end of the problem.
That's no way to live. Have a relationship, Dan.
It is. Happy wife, happy life.
Oh dear. Well, ain't that the truth? What are you? Can you say what you're currently working on at the moment, or what have you just finished working on that's going to be released soon?
Let me see. I just finished volume one of the Marsupilami.
Oh yes, of course.
I'll be starting volume 2 tomorrow.
Now, what was the name of that creator again?
The Marsupilami.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, it's weird in French as well, don't worry.
I remember that title because Disney actually did an animated series. Was it in the early 90s, late 80s?
I think it was that.
A fairly short-lived series, but it was that, wasn't it? Is it based on those French comics, isn't it? Is it French or Belgian?
It would be that one, yeah.
Yeah. Are they Belgian?
Franquin, the creator, was he Belgian? I think so.
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, I think he was Belgian, yeah.
Yeah. So those, when are those books going to be on shelves, do you think?
Volume 1, both of them actually are due in September.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right around the corner.
Yeah, when we're emailing, setting up this show, Jerome was saying that there's going to be quite a few books coming between now and December, if that's correct.
We usually publish about 4 every month, so 4 this month, 4 next month, 4 in September.
Is that the sort of standard number then? You know, for every
for us, yeah, around 4.
Wow,
it's 3 sometimes, 5 sometimes, but we do about 44 every year.
Wow,
nice one. That's high turnover.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are the older sort of books, aren't they? You know, that they've been published in France and Belgium and etc. And you've now got the publishing rights. I guess like Marsupilami is how old is that book? That's an older book, isn't it?
Good grief! I have no idea when it started. It was the character was created in another series, Spirou. Which is 70 years old.
Wow.
And Gaston Lagaffe is 50 years old. Marsupilami was created a little bit before Gaston Lagaffe. So, yeah, it's 55 years old or something like that.
Wow.
Not the series itself, the character. Yeah. He got the his own series in the 70s, I think, or early 80s.
Yeah. So there's this.
But it's all.
Yeah, there's a huge sort of wealth of books to draw upon, isn't there? Really?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not just... I mean, do you find that the majority of books that you're translating are the older books, or are there some modern ones as well that get through?
We have a fairly good mix. Alone is fairly recent. Mm. We have a bunch of series from Leo Aldebaran and Betelgeuse. entries. They're well, they're actually 20 years old now. Oh dear. Oh dear. I feel old suddenly. But yeah, Orbital is fairly recent. We have, I don't know, maybe a quarter to a third are fairly recent offerings.
Yeah.
And the others are, you know, all-time classics. Bug Danny, Blake and Mortimer, Lucky Luke, obviously, 13, Largo Winch, they've been around for 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah. But the standard is such, isn't it? I mean, they're classics, but there's still a lot of people out there who don't necessarily know about these books.
No.
You know. Does that ever... Well, frustrate is a bit of a half-life for it. But,
have no idea.
Yeah, well, is it frustrating, like, when you've got all this wealth of sort of classics like that, but, you know, that so many people don't know about?
It's massively frustrating. I occasionally talk to friends of mine who are huge geeks, who love comic books, but who are often Americans. And they're going to talk at length about Superman and Batman and whatnot. And yeah. When I start talking about what we produce on this side of the pond, they just look at me like I'm crazy. Like, you have comics? What are you talking about? What, Asterix and Tintin? No, we have more than that.
Yeah,
and I show them stuff like Largo Winch and the art of Largo Winch, and I show them 13 or and they just go oh okay, and then they just wander off.
Oh no,
it's horribly frustrating. Occasionally I get one hooked.
yeah,
but it's hard.
Yeah, so I mean, do you find that it's a series like 13 is a good one to hook people in, you know, those sort of broader, sort of bigger hits, like,
yeah.
You know, just sort of, oh, if you've never tried a European book before, try this, because, you know, you like, I don't know, a Black Widow or some sort of spy story, try this, and that inevitably works on them.
Inevitably, no. Definitely not. But, yeah, 13 would be a good opening. Pretty much everything by Jean Van Hamme is usually a good bet, because he chooses artists that are spectacular and so good that the art cannot be dated. Even 13, the early ones are 40 years old.
Yeah.
But the work of Vance is just fantastic, and it stays good enough. There's no problem, even if it's written what it depicts. Is America in the 70s. But yeah. It's fine. It still works. Thorgal, Largo Winch, 13, depending on what kind of universe you like. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
It's the kind of gripping story that will get you hooked. Yeah. And if not, then okay, fair enough. Give up on European comics and move on to something else. But...
Don't give up. Keep going. No, don't listen
to
him.
There's so much there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where can people find more about Cinebook then? Where can they go online, etc.?
Well, there's our website, obviously, cinebook.co.uk. Our whole catalogue is available. You can peruse a couple of pages. Go to Isneo and look us up, because very often they have one or two volumes that are free to read for that day or whatever. It's a good way to, you know, sink your teeth in it and see what you can can discover.
I've seen in terms of digital that, like, Isneo and Comixology and stuff, they do sales, or like you say, that they offer up free stuff, and a lot of it are the European books. So, you know, there's almost no excuse not to try something.
No. When you find a whole volume of Valerian, or it's usually Valerian these days for some reason.
Yeah.
But when you find a whole volume for $1.99, just, come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Now, for those, back to that one. If people wanted to pick that up with the film coming out very soon, what volume would you say is a good one? I mean, I know you're a big fan of all of them, but if gun to the head, if I said pick one volume that you would recommend to people who wanted to try it for the first time, which volume would that be?
Start with volume 6.
Volume 6.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the one that the movie is based on.
Oh,
it's easily one of the best ones, story wise. Just start with that one, and if you don't like it, yeah, okay, fair enough. There's no hope for you. but you start with that one, and then you probably read, I'd say number four, which is very good as well.
So at that point, so you get it is a sort either... of story you can go backwards and forwards. There's no, you know, you won't get lost.
No, not really. They're self-contained. Mostly they're self-contained. The characters are never introduced in such a way that you have a whole huge backstory needed on them. You do need to have read number one, the one that takes place in New York in 86, before you go on to read number 9 and 10, which are the best of the series. I cannot recommend enough that people read those two, but not as an entry point.
Okay.
6, maybe 4, 5, or 7, those numbers are just the best anyway of the series. 6, 4, 1, because you have to, and please, you know, don't let the earlier art and the slightly clumsy story deter you. And then 9 and 10, you get hooked. You'll be hooked.
I think that's great, actually. You know, cause some people may jump in with a 9 and 10, and then they might not be able to get into it. So that's perfect. Thank you very much for that,
Brilliant. It's a great recommendation.
I know which ones I'm going to be picking up next. So thank you very much for joining us this week, Jerome. It's been fantastic.
You are very welcome.
Thanks, Jerome.
As always, I think it's only the tip of the iceberg, so I think we'll be talking about this a lot more. Do you get a chance to go out to many sort of events or shows in France and beyond?
Personally, not many. Every year I go to Angoulême because, you know, it's the place. It's the biggest comic festival in Europe and the second biggest in the world. So
I'd love to go to that. Just the very sound of it sounds like my brain would melt from all of the amazing stuff.
It's very different from American or UK conventions. It's not as geeky.
Yeah.
But it's everywhere. The entire town is used for it. Yeah. And there's artwork on the side of the houses. It's an experience. It's something to do at least once.
Oh, brilliant!
Aside from that, I personally don't go to many others. Mm. But Cinebook itself does a few in England, the Lakes and Thought Bubbles in Leeds.
Yeah.
At least those two fairly. We try to go every year.
Yeah.
And occasionally another one or two when we can, basically.
Yeah. I know certainly I've seen Cinebook at quite a few shows, and hand on heart, you know, in the past I may not have picked up some of the books, but I'm certainly going to now that I'm a convert.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, you should definitely at conventions, because we do great deals.
Yeah, it's fantastic deals that are on.
Yeah, you get maybe half price on the stuff, so.
Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah. Do you hear that, listeners? There's absolutely no excuse.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go now. Go. Bye.
Thank you very much again, Jerome. You've been fantastic.
You are very welcome.
Yes.
Thanks, Jerome.
Yes.
Bye.
So there you have it, folks. That was, as you can tell, Jerome was a good sport. He's a very hard-working man, and he's got a book collection that, dear Lord, you know,
yeah,
a lot of us are no doubt.
Yeah, you were just telling me about that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
I think he could put his book collection against Tony's, and there'd be quite the tussle.
We could have a cross the streams moment, couldn't we?
I think that the building that happens in would probably plummet into the centre of the earth.
Yeah,
I'm a bit worried that my roof is going to collapse, because that's where I keep a lot of my comics. So, yeah.
Yes. So thanks again to Jerome for joining us. He's welcome back any time, and I expect that'll be in the near future, because I don't think European books in the recommendations isn't going to happen soon. We may have a few this week, but we'll get onto that.
Well, I'd love to see we talk briefly about Valerian kind of kicking off the European comic revolution,
yeah,
as
really
it were.
I really hope it does. Yeah, I really hope it does.
We hope so that does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just on the subject of Cinebook, I know have you read 13, the first volume, yet?
No.
No, I haven't yet. It's on my pile to read, but.
and that is incredible. And the Leo books, the Insiders books, there's just so much great stuff that's in your book. And I know they do Thought Bubble every year. And if you go to Thought Bubble, I think they do three for the price of two there.
That's nice. Yeah.
And just there's so much good stuff there. Just the art will just blow you away. Mm. I was just so interested how you they get so. I mean, a lot of their talent comes from Argentina and all these sort of places as well. You know.
Yeah.
What's the cowboy one? Blueberry.
Yeah, Blueberry.
Yeah.
It's, funny enough, I bought some French metal Herlants the other day, and they've got the original Blueberry in them, and they're just fucking gorgeous. Oh my god. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, I think you've got a connect. You've got a connection to Moebius in your recommend, haven't you, Dan? I think
I do indeed. Yeah,
I've been trying. I want to hear what you think about that, mate. Actually, yeah, I'm really interested in that because I reread some of that today. Yeah, so great stuff. Yeah,
nice. Mm. So wonderful. We want to see all you lovely listeners read some more European books. We'll probably post on the group about it, and then it'll kick off there.
Maybe if the book club wanted to do a European one of some kind, it would be lovely. I'd love to hear about that.
I think that'd be great. And there's certainly plenty of choice. So it doesn't. I would suggest that it doesn't have to be one of our recommendations. You can just
just choose one. Yeah,
there's one I'm going to track down after my recommendation because it leads into it.
Yeah,
or leads from it, and I've not. It's one of those things that how the fuck did I miss that? And
right.
It's massive. So I won't give the game away.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I've got a clue. Yeah, I've got it in front of me, actually. Yeah, good.
Nice.
What was that noise?
That was a good laugh. What do they call those things that look like thumbs or bunions? Minions. That's the sort of noise a minion would make, wouldn't it?
Right. I want some artwork of Tony Edmonds as a minion.
I was reading a bit of a side point. How great those DC crossover comics were doing. You know, the Batman Elmer Fudd.
They're apparently... Bob Fingerman's done a variant cover for the Elmer Fudd one, and I need to track it down.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think it's
sold
out. The third printing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wouldn't have imagined that, but there you go.
No.
People are weird, aren't they?
It's a crazy world. I'll tell what's even crazier. We've got some shout-outs, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. Nice. Done.
Thanks.
You know when you're in a conversation with someone, you're in a cafe, and you go, I'll have a coffee. And funny you should mention coffee, because my friend will have a tea. Do you do it like in just everyday conversation now as well, do you?
Yeah.
That'd be fucking ace.
Yes. I might. Yeah. No. Right. I'm not taking this any further. Right, go on. We've got a little bit of a special shout out, haven't we?
We have. Yeah, you do it. Go on, you do it.
Why have I got to do it?
Because you're the boss. You keep telling me that. I'm the boss.
Well, I'm the boss, and I'm telling you, you've got to do it.
You're not my wife. Well, occasionally you are. Okay. It's for Sarah Harris, who organised a small press event in Swindon at the Incredible Comic Shop in the shopping centre. Is it the Brunel Plaza? Is that what the name
it
is?
Yeah, Brunel Plaza, I believe.
I know I spoke to Sarah on the run-up to it quite a lot, and she was saying, oh, are you coming down? Are you going to cover it for Down the Tubes? And so and I really wanted to, and I made it in the end, and it was an absolutely brilliant day.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really, really good. So,
I actually think football was better than some conventions.
Yeah. What I liked about it, and we'll get on to who was there in a minute, but what I did like about it is this is clearly a comic book shop that has a lot of regular customers. Looking at the pull list, and there were a lot of people who came in, and they came down to the end of the store where the small press is. They were genuinely interested in finding out about stuff.
Yeah,
you know, as well as their whatever they pick up normally. You know, they were picking up books and chatting to creators. It was just great to see. You know, that open mindedness for something that
And it was a great big shop. And you've got a shop where, let's face it, most people, because they work during the week and who are buying comics, go to the comic shop on a Saturday. So they go in, look at the shelf and think, oh, there's a bit of an event going on in this shop. I'll have a look at that as well. And that was why it worked, I think, so well. And you've got, you know, the three guys who run the shop, really nice guys, weren't they? Really sort of pro small press. They've created a whole sort of shelving section for the small press that Sarah's organised. And Sarah did pull her finger out around the publicising it, didn't she, really? You know, she did posters and all that sort of thing. If you go to Down the Tube, you can see quite a sexy picture of Vince standing next to his own picture on the wall. That's quite cool.
Yeah.
It's got to be done. That's why I got the big figures, that article, I'm sure.
I really need to I need to sort of do an editing job on the pictures that you post. I need to make sure that I see them before they
I showed you that one. Just you looking like, oh, fucking here we go again. There's you got that sort of face on you.
Well, the thing is, when I saw it on like your sort of phone, it looked all right. And then as I looked afterwards, I seem to have gotten wider.
The best one is the group photograph. We're doing it. I have to take the group photograph. So Sarah hands me her phone, and she's going, "Oh, everyone in the group," and then you're in the loo. So literally, come out after doing an enormous shit in the loo.
No, like, shut up! You're as bad as Matt Garvey, right? Look, I went in.
And we're banging on the door, going, "Hurry up, Vince! Look, like, hang on!
Look, folks! You know he's full of shit. This man, right?" I went in for a tinkle.
A bit like the Incredible Comic Shop's disabled toilet, which is now overflowing with it, I believe.
I went in for a tinkle, and it happened to be the one moment when everyone came together. So it was like a flipping announcement when I came out of the bog. It was like the. I tell you what, that was the worst part of my day.
You got a cheer when you came out of the toilet. You don't often get that, do you?
No.
Yeah,
I like to because when I've done potty, I like to give myself a little round of applause. But there, you got a cheer from the whole shop. It's pretty impressive.
I did. Yeah, it was quite good. And if I was a little bit longer, it's because I always wash my hands.
Good man. Good to know.
Yeah.
Should take that up one day. I mean, that's the kind of thing you could get a complex over going out to the toilet, and then there's a whole room full of people to clap. What the fuck is going on?
Can you imagine that, man, coming out of the toilet? And just everyone's looking at you and clapping. That's what happened. Yeah. I'm traumatized.
Beautiful moment.
Yeah. Anyway.
Good. Anyway, so who was there? So Matt Garvey was next to you, wasn't he?
He was.
Then next to him was the mighty Nick Prolix. I actually met Matt Garvey in Membry Services, and we had breakfast together. It was quite a beautiful moment, and we had a good chat, a little bit of a chin wag. He's a good egg. And I have to say, I put in that piece, and I mean it, thoroughly mean it, that if you want to see how to sell a comic at convention, watch that geezer.
Yeah,
you know, there's no backstepping with him. He's on his front foot and he's engaging with people, and it's good to see.
It's genuine. It was thoroughly nice to meet him for the first time. So and on the left of me was Emily Owen and Gav Mitchell.
Oh yeah, we promised to write Emily a letter, haven't we? I said I'd write her a letter. Yeah, so that'd be nice. We decided no more sort of tweeting at each other. Every week I'm going to write her a nice letter.
This isn't Jane Eyre.
Troll Tooth Wars and Emily's new book.
It did well.
It's nice. They had sort of two fresh books off the, you know, didn't they? And so did Matt and Sarah Dunkerton next to them, didn't they?
Nice. I picked up 3 and 4 of Mulp.
Oh, good. Did she do the sketching it for you? Or
I think she did. Yes, she did indeed. Yeah. On both issues.
I'm gunning for the Troll Tooth Wars at London Super Comic Con if Gav's there.
Yeah,
they aren't going to be there. They're not on that one. Well, because they're getting married the week after.
So. Oh, they are, bloody hell, aren't they? Yeah.
So, we'll get you a copy somehow, Dan.
And Nick Prolix was there. He was always a good egg, and I was sort of wandering around looking through the back issue with him. We had a good laugh. He had the long way to come. He comes all the way down from East Anglia, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a trooper around that. And I think everyone did quite well, I think, didn't they, sales-wise?
Yeah.
You know.
Some of those smaller events, because I think you have almost less internal pressure. You know, when you go to a convention, there's always, oh, how many books am I going to sell? Am I going to make my table money back? Blah, blah, you know, and you put... These aren't pressures that are forced upon you. I think each individual sort of thinks in their head, right, how well am I going to do this time? I need to sell so many books. But with these smaller events, I feel that because they're a bit more relaxed and a bit more chilled out, you always do better than you think you're going to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you said that on the day, didn't you? Yeah. It was much more sort of chilled out scene, wasn't it? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and it was just a thoroughly great day. So,
and everyone stayed late, didn't they? I know they finished at 4, but I don't think anyone packed their tables up till about 4:20.
Yeah.
Everyone's just sort of wandering around and having a laugh. And they're definitely going to do some more. Hopefully Sarah will have a hand in it, because she... I think she's a bit nervous on the run-up to it, but she did organise something that just went so smoothly. She even did, she baked biscuits for it and all sorts, didn't she?
Nice. All accounts, it went absolutely fantastically. Yeah. So, well done, Sarah.
Yeah.
And the piece I wrote on it on the Never On Anything is, I think, is now in the top 5 most viewed pieces already.
Yeah.
Nice.
And he put it up this morning. So, it's a popular idea.
Yeah. Read that as well if you want to, to give a good idea of what the event was like.
It's more a sort of photo thing. Yeah. I just wanted to put some photos just to show. It's all right saying, we did a signing in a shop and everyone thinks it's just a desk in the corner, but this wasn't,
And the group picture That is actually my actual height.
And, of which Baracus was very rude about.
Yes. Well, she's disgraceful. Absolutely.
You're quite a big lad, aren't you, Vince?
Yeah.
The camera's not kind of...
I was about to say, fuck off, Dan.
Well, you're disabled as well.
Walked straight into that.
Oh,
the toilet, that is.
Yeah. Anyway,
very well, yeah. Limping away.
So yeah. it was a cracking day, and like, you know, yeah. Long may more events like that take place. So yeah. Do we have any other shout outs?
The other thing I noticed is with the sort of wealth of small press and pro books I've written about, in there, you know, I have to say, and now we're all reviewers to a certain extent, aren't we? And then we do get quotes, the awesome comics, you know, what we say occasionally. Yeah. If you're going to, can I just ask the small press community and any professionals, if you're going to put a quote on something, can you put the person's name on it? I don't know, you know, if you're using the quote. Yeah, I think it's fair. And I know there's a lot on there about saying, oh, if you're using art and you're not crediting the creator, and if you're using writing, you're not crediting the writer, and all this sort of thing. I think I put a lot of effort into some of my reviews, you know. And if I write something that you like, then put my flipping name on it. No names, but I saw a trade yesterday that had quite a lengthy quote that made up about a third, at least, of the page from me. And it just said, down the tubes. And I was like, oh, okay. You know. Yeah. The other thing is, you put my name on it, I'm going to buy it as well, to be fair. So there you go. Most people are pretty good at it, but you know, probably once a month I see something, I think, oh, brilliant, another one, you know. So not to be a moany bastard, but it's just something I quite like to see.
No, I think it's
yes, fair enough.
Yeah, credit where credit's
due. Come on, courtesy.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And that goes for any and all reviewers, really, isn't it? Really, I think if you're going to put someone's site or someone's magazine on there, why can't you?
Oh, Matt Harrow has just texted me with, what the actual fuck? Nick Cage isn't the new Doctor Who? Once again, Matt sums up the ridiculousness of the internet with one text to me. Well done, Matt.
But I tell you what isn't ridiculous, our recommendations.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who wants to go first this week?
I don't mind going first.
I'm looking forward to it.
I, being this European show, we were going to go for European books. So I just jumped on Google and said, like, the top 10 European comics. And this one caught my eye. It's The Meta Barons.
Yep.
Well, I didn't know at the time when I first got it. It's actually based off of a character in the Incal, which was published in 1981, which is written by Jorodowski and illustrated by Mobius.
Yeah. Oh, is it from the original volume? Is it the Meta Baron characters? Because I know there was a series of volumes of the Incal, isn't there? There were a number of different artists, one of which I think is responsible for the Meta Barons, I think, as I remember.
Okay, maybe I might have got that wrong, but he definitely appears in the Incal.
Right, real.
Essentially, the first volume and the subsequent five after that, there's many books, but the first five volumes deals with the ancestry of the character, and it passes from father to son till it gets up to the modern day character, which I'm sure he's got a name that isn't just the Meta Baron, because it's a title that's earned. Yeah, so it's written by Jorodowski, and the art's by Jimenez. We say it's European, but it's a Spanish and something else title.
I've got a feeling he's Argentinian, isn't he? I've got a feeling.
I think it could well be, Jimenez. Just without going further, the artwork in this is just absolutely fantastic. It's just amazing. Like, every little panel, hand-painted. It's God knows how long it took to do. And it is one of those books you pick up and you're like, geez, like, first, straight away, it hits you, like, just from the kind of, like, the very real visceral kind of bodies, movement, energy, the designs on the sci-fi stuff. One of the big things I like is when you kind of have the simple skin, and then it's the contrast of having like this kind of bulky armor with lots of detail on it. It always sells it really well. Story wise, this came out relatively soon after Jorodowski. He was trying to get a Dune off of the ground.
Yeah.
And there's a fantastic documentary called Jorodowski's Dune.
Yeah.
And it goes into how he was trying to get the film made, and the amount of creators that he's got onto the project that now, like, they're kind of like big names like Mobius, Giga. There's a couple of chaps that do like this, the star, Starship stuff.
Right.
Very influential. And he kind of went around and kind of handpicked these artists, and he basically called them his spiritual warriors. And they were like, under his direction, they started putting together Dune. And that's had a lot of kind of like far reaching effect on stuff like Star Wars, etc., etc.
Yeah.
But yeah, bringing it back to the Meta Barons, this book, oh God, it's really hard to describe, but it's how crazy and intense the kind of story is. You kind of have to, you start reading it and you're hanging on your, like, you're hanging on your fingertips. It's moving at such a speed. It's got a lot of kind of cues from the Dune, like plot lines with sort of father and sons and prophecies and kind right. of like the Bene Gesserit sisterhood in Dune. There's something similar in this, but each page has ideas in it that in other series you could pull that idea apart to make a whole run of comic books on their own. So the story moves at such a fast pace. It's incredible.
It's also quite nasty, isn't it? It's like
really nasty.
It does have that feel of, like, you know, when Star Wars came along and everything, science fiction for a while became all about heroes. You know, it became our new adventure films, doesn't it? Really, but it sort of predates that a little bit. I know. Is it the first one? Is Othan and Honorata or some? Is it Honorata?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And then the bit at the start where he's removing his kid's ears.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my God, that's horrible. A father type, because the Meta Barons are. The techno priests are part mechanical, aren't they? They have implants.
Yeah, it's all kind of like transhuman. They all kind of have a bit of kind of bionic something, and each one's different.
Yeah.
I think the last Meta Baron, he has his ear crushed, and then this kind of disc plopped on that kind of replaces half of his brain. And it starts with the first Meta Baron, which is Othon,
right.
who has his entire genitals and pelvis, going into spoilers here, blown off and replaced with kind of like a metal crotch with no genitals, obviously.
We've all done that, though, haven't we? Yeah. You know what I mean? We've all had to get that.
Yeah. There's a sequence later on in the book. There's like some gifs that go around that say, you seeing this shit? And it's like someone looking around in disbelief, like, you seeing this? Where he gets into like a black penis-shaped starship, one-man fighter. And he plugs the joystick into where his crotch is and then flies off into sort of battle. And they've gone to rescue like this princess's fetus that's been captured by these space pirates. And the Armada's bringing it back. And the spaceship it's being carried on is like the hips of a woman. And he shoots his spaceship into a strangely familiar shaped area and gets this egg out. And it's like, fucking hell.
Can we be a bit more obvious about this? Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Dan, if anyone wasn't listening for the past 10 minutes before you said that, they're probably going to think you've gone mad.
Yeah. I was looking around like, fucking hell.
Fucking mental. I read his autobiography last year, and he's a fucking crazy person. Yeah. Absolutely. Have you ever seen, you know, is it Holy Mountain and El Topo and all these sort of movies? They make no fucking sense. I mean, they look interesting, but they're just craziness. And he just believes his own fucking nonsense. I know everyone has a row with him. I think he sued Ridley Scott, didn't he? Or no, really? it wasn't Ridley Scott. It was Luc Besson around The Fifth Element. But I think nothing happened with that. That's allegedly. And then he said, oh, it wasn't me who sued them. It was the publishers or something like that. And I know that Jonathan Ross, I heard Jonathan Ross talking about it the other day, and he did a week's documentary about him and filmed him for a week. And at the end of it, he started a sort of argument in an empty room with Jonathan Ross and then sort of walked away from the project. Yeah, he sort of...
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me too much. But,
yeah, I love the fact that people are like that. I like the fact that we sort of transgressive sort of... And his films are transgressive. You know, and his comics, they're both... There's some stuff he touches on you think, oh, I don't really know about. You know, there really is. But I like the fact that you've got that craziness being channeled into a sort of something like science fiction, which is what we need, isn't it? You know,
I think what's very different, this is very different for me about this, was there's no slow moments, really. You don't get much of a feel for characters
because
everyone's so intense and driven to what they're doing. It's just the plot just does not relent there's very few moments where it kind of lets up in any way, shape or form, and you don't get a lot of feel for the characters. The story's told with two robots, one telling the other one. It's a robot android called Tonto talking to one called Lothar, and they're like kind of narrators to the story of like, oh, and then this happened, and then a sequence are played out. So it's like you're being told a story, and
yeah, it's like a history, almost, isn't it? Almost, yeah, yeah.
Almost,
yeah.
Like a fairy tale, like this kind of how this legendary Meta Baron comes, where his origins lie, and. Yeah, not to spoil it, but there's some even more crazy shit in that book. Yeah. I would recommend buying Volume 1 and then seeing what you think of it.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's an experience, and it is inspiring to get out of your comfort zone occasionally from reading, yeah. You know, the regular small press or big press, whatever you're going to call it, comics that you're reading, and to have a look at this stuff, because it is really interesting. I know I was speaking to Jay Gunn about it, and he's a big Mobius fan. Mobius, whatever you're going to call him, but he's a huge fan of his, and I know Mark is a huge fan of the Blueberry books, Mark Lamming as well, and we often talk about him, and I think there's some amazing stuff by the, especially him and Jodorowsky, the stuff they do is just fucking incredible. And I have to say, is it Juan Gimenez, isn't it, the artist?
Yeah,
I tried to review a book of his, which I'll mention in a minute, and his art is just out of this world. Yeah. It's incredible stuff.
I've got to say, like, I found this a really interesting read, but I'm not desperate to pick up the other books.
Yeah, they're not page turners, are they? They're just, you've really got to soak it up. It's a real.
Yeah, I know. I think I'd be going back to the Incal and getting a collection of that and seeing how that plays out.
Yeah.
Because, that seems, after doing a bit of reading about it, sounds very interesting.
Well, when you look at the Incal, the copy of the Incal, the Epic Journey I've got, was put about out by DC Comics. And yeah, right, okay. Every second page is a boob or a spaceship looks like a cock or, like you say, flying into a vajayjay and all this sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, it's it's heavily sexualized. I mean, that's just kind of one of the more overt bits, where there's just nudity everywhere, which is
great. Like this show.
Yeah.
I did flash up on camera earlier.
I saw that on the WhatsApp when I was trying to connect.
Yeah. I only saw the top of his head. Like a week.
Which one?
Dad.
There's a comb over on both.
Oh, that is rough. So you can get the Meta Barons, I don't know.
That's published by Humanoids.
Yeah, it's Humanoids, isn't it?
I've got mine on Amazon.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And that'll be available.
You shop around, you find a second-hand copy. There's been various different sort of volumes of it, and different people have put it out over the time, and you know, you can get all different versions of it.
I would imagine that would be available digitally as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, mate. God, yeah, I think it's on Comixology. Yeah.
Nice one. Okay, Tony, what about you?
Well, I had a few that I tried. One book I ordered, which I may well talk about next week, but I've just looked at my Amazon deliveries, and it's not arriving until tomorrow, which is another book that Jay Gunn recommended to me. So that'll be coming tomorrow. Then I tried, if anyone read The Mail Out from Courtney Kung Fu this week, they'll have seen that I was trying to review a book called The Fourth Power, which is written and drawn by Juan Gimenez. Book one, which is Supramental out of Humanoids UK, and it like the Meta Barons, it is fucking incredible, but I just got completely lost. It just I got to about 30, but I thought, what the fuck is going on? I didn't have a Scooby-Doo what was going on.
I had to read mine in increments.
Yeah,
I couldn't do it in one sitting.
Yeah.
I got a couple of pages, I was like, right, that's enough for me now.
Yeah,
I'm gonna look at the phone.
Yeah, it's just, I think he sort of goes, "Oh, well, I quite want to draw a space element floating, a space elephant floating along on a balloon now." And he's, I'm like, "What's happening?" 2 seconds ago, this sort of weird kangaroo type green alien was trying to have sex with a naked lady, and then we're at that. And I will go back to it. I need to give it more. I need to give it more time, and when I'm, you know, got a quieter moment to read it. But so I didn't do that one. So I moved on from that one. So what I did is I went to a book published by Europe Comics called Incognito, and it's not the one by Brubaker. It's a French book, and it's by Gregory Mardon, and it's called the Volume 1 Perfect Victims. It's called. The story, I'll sort of sum it up for you, is a bloke's out shopping in a supermarket and he asks members of staff, can you tell me where such and such is? And they just ignore him. And he believes that he has his power where he can't be seen He has this sort of ability where he can be just become invisible to people in the street, which I think we all, at some point when we're sort of trying to buy a drink in a busy bar, we've all felt that a bit, haven't we? You know.
Yeah.
And he has these sort of daydreams about creepily following women home and sort of walking into their flat and watching them take their clothes off and go into the shower and stuff like that. So he's not a good guy at all. He goes in a bar and he sort of starts talking to this sort of rather annoying friend of his, drunk friend. We've all got them. Everyone points at me. and then he walks home and he sees a silhouette of a woman in on a balcony smoking, just a sort of busty silhouette of this woman. And he decides out of his in his drunkenness to try, climb up the drainpipe and try and speak to her, you know, at least speak to her. But instead he falls down. He wakes up in the hospital. He's woken up by his mother initially and has a sort of dream about his childhood, which tells a lot about the sort of anxiety of his situation. And then he falls asleep again and is woken up to find this woman sitting in front of him, who he'd seen on the balcony. And she turns out to be a physiotherapist and also to be the person who called the ambulance for him after she looked over and saw him there with a crushed ankle. So from there, it becomes hugely complicated. The woman has a brother who is in a wheelchair at home and is incredibly jealous of what his sister gets up to. And believe me when I say this, it gets very weird from that point onwards. Mardon, he speaks about sort of very sort of nasty and dark emotions. And he does it with just a absolute pitch black humor. It's in equal parts of noir, in equal parts of thriller, and in equal parts of sort of disturbingly comic horror. The angry brother suggests something. He suggests that his sister should do something. And in her sort of frustration of just him just railing on at her all the time, she kind of agrees to it. And I'll let you read it because it may have perhaps the most disturbing sex scene I've seen in a long time. And I've seen some disturbing sex, I can tell you that now. You know, as we all know.
saying no more. Saying yeah. No more.
Disturbing because of the... it's not like super sort of sexually explicit. It's just got this sort of, I don't know, this sort of the fears of the average man are played upon in this sexual sort of incident. I'll call it that.
Mm.
You get some excellent wordless sequences. There's one bit where he's following a lady and it's sort of follow, you know, like ducks behind a car, walks behind a wall, looks around a corner, this sort of thing. And it's so well done in a wordless way in the streets of Paris. But it's far from a comfortable read. It's throughout the whole thing, you get this sort of terrible fear that something like really horrible is about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not for all ages, and it does completely go there. I thoroughly recommend it. Really good. I got it through Comixology, and it's, as I say, it's published by Europe Comics. I think it was $6.99 or something like that. And Gregory Mardon is just brilliant. I love his stuff. Absolutely brilliant. It goes back to a bit about that French book I reviewed a few weeks ago about the guy who tries to get off with women everywhere.
Yeah.
A couple of the male characters are done, they're under-realized in their facial aspect sort of thing. They're almost like caricature, just a couple of lines done as for faces, and the women are sort of overtly noir females. They're sort of that chanteuse from the, you know, who sings on the, you know, in the wartime bar, or the busty barmaid, or, you know, a couple of them are like that. But it's got a deeper underlying theme to it about sort of the fragility of the human sort of situation in regards to jealousy and fear. And loss and stuff like that. Very, very clever. Extremely clever. If only we had books like that over here, I'll be absolutely over the moon. So, yeah, that's my one.
Nice one.
Nice cool. one. Did you say that was from Europe Comics?
Yes, it was, yeah. Another one from them.
Yes, yeah. And we're going to have another one from them now. It's a book that I've had on the list to recommend to people for a little while now. And it's following on from one I've already recommended. It's the fourth volume of Isabella, which is the sort of samurai series.
Oh, yeah.
By written by Raoul and art by Gabor. Got it on Comixology. It's 51 pages, full colour, and it's a continuation of the story that I harped on about last time, because there's been three volumes so far. There was the first one, The Night Man. Volume 2 was A Sea of Corpses. Volume 3 was Daughters of Eru. And this one is... Volume 4, Under the Tomb of 500 Kings. Nice. That's what sets it up. But now you've got this Japanese samurai warrior, and she's now in Ireland. Her trip has taken her all the way into Ireland, which is very interesting to see that sort of mix of those cultures. coming together, and just the artwork's beautiful. The story jumps forward a little bit because at the end of Volume 3, she was on a boat heading to Ireland, and this this issue starts with a sort of a breaking and entering into a castle during a rainstorm, which is just amazing. You know, so you've got like Saxon-like soldiers just getting absolutely mullered and taken out, and it's just just fantastic. And it has that. What I love about this series is the action is just perfectly done. It's beautiful. It doesn't hold back. You know, some people get properly taken out, and you know, you do see a flash of the red stuff here and there. Not gratuitous, but you get some nice, painful looking deaths, shall we say. But very beautifully rendered. But on top of all the action, you have the characters as well. I mean, I sat down and just... I started this fourth volume. I bought it, downloaded it, and it was sat there for probably about a week or so. And then I thought, oh, I'll start reading that. Started it, did not stop until it was done. And this is through the... I read it through the Guided View narrative as well. And all of these books have been like that. As soon as you pick them up and start, you know, it's just so good. I mean, it is a historical sort of epic about a female samurai warrior and her journey, but there's supernatural elements that come into it. Certainly at the end, every book has a... it's not a cliffhanger. The first three books, it sort of ends that story with a kind of like, you really want to see where the story's going. This one has more of a cliffhanger. It's the first book that's got... And the final page is... Oh, fuck me. It's just... you know, when we've said it before that sometimes if these sort of pages were in an image book or in a Marvel book, people would be going absolutely mental over this stuff. And the art by Gabor is just unbelievable. His mastery over lighting and just action and movement, it just takes my breath away for a lot of it. I'll probably have to post some. I think I did it with the first three volumes. I posted some pages on the group talk, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, I remember seeing it. I must get on that, actually. Yeah, it's on my list, that one. Definitely. Yeah.
It's a great character story as well. There's like a small motley crew of sort of characters that you really do grow to love. You know, they're all a bunch of sort of mercenaries and ne'er-do-wells, but they're like a little family that come together. And seeing it in Ireland as well, because until then it had been pretty much Japan the whole way, and just seeing the color palette sort of change, and just you can tell there's attention to detail in everything that's happened. And you even get you get some quick sort of flashbacks of there's a couple of pages telling you what the heroes have been doing up until the point you're at now, and it's amazing. But I also want to see more about those stories, because it's all done in like one horizontal panel, but it seems like the most amazing story in the world ever. So I can't recommend this series enough. I mean, I don't know when the next one will be out, but there's four volumes out, so that's about like 200 odd pages of beautiful comics to get hold of. You can get it on Comixology. Each one is $4.99. I don't know when they'll be in the sale next, but just pay for them, just get them. Europe Comics are putting out some serious stellar stuff digitally. It's only digitally they do stuff, isn't it? They don't do...
I think that's right. Yeah, I think it's so much easier, isn't it, for them to do them. Yeah, because even Humanoids UK, which is, I suppose, the big name over here and has been for years, you don't really see it that many of their books in comic shops.
Yeah. So this is a series that I'm hooked on, and next time Volume 5 comes out, I'll be there, because whereas it's been a little more historical, there's monsters and stuff coming into it now, and there is a, without spoiling too much, that a monster gets born due to this ritual in quite a gruesome way. I'll have to send you guys some pictures, because it's just really well done.
yeah
definitely.
But it is kind of like oh that's grim, but it lends to sort of, you see that sort of big bad at the end and you're like, right, I need the next volume of this. So I think it's a Spanish book. I think it may be a Spanish book. I think it may be. Yeah. The only sore point of this is I just wish there was hardcover versions that I could have in my collection. That's the only only sad part of Europe Comics, isn't it, really? You know, these guys putting out these digital versions. Because I know I've certainly discovered quite a few great ones there. So there you go. So, yes, several different amazing European books there for you guys to pick up.
Can I just say, I've put a post up about Doctor Who and me just caring that they act well, and I've had a number of messages from Matt Harrower now, mostly saying that it should be Holly from Geordie Shore as Doctor Who, which I thoroughly agree with. And just to read this one, because he's making me chuckle, Dave Kennedy just said, I burned my house down and threw my family in the sea when I found out who it was, and I don't even watch Doctor Who.
All hail Dave.
You took that well then.
That's amazing. Yeah, touche. I love the fact that there's this sharp wit going on amongst creators. That, yeah. Like, yeah, I think we're all in agreement that some people just need to get over it.
And I've just sent you the box set. I put on my wish list on Amazon, Doctor Screw, the complete series, 4-disc DVD box set. So I'll send you the picture of it, so that'll be fine.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
Looks a bit like you, actually.
Who?
Doctor Screw.
No, it doesn't. No, it does. That looks. Oh,
that's pretty weak. Can have done a bit more with that. Oh well.
Yeah.
Oh dear. That's what people should be like harping on about.
Yeah. He looks like he's got a Sky remote in his hand.
Yeah, you know, it does a bit, doesn't it? Yeah.
Look, don't Google this, people. Don't give them more attention than they need.
What do they call the TARDIS?
Oh, I don't know. I remember. I only watched it in like 2 minute bit. What?
Oh dear! I have to watch.
I'll put this on the group page now. Right now, it's going on there.
I have to watch it in shifts.
To screw the complete series.
Oh dear. Well, for a highbrow and intelligent show, I think we still made it our own.
Yeah. Yes. Some highs and lows,
like every show. Yeah. And this, as always, this show wouldn't be responsible, wouldn't be here without our good friends at Comic House, our sponsor. Yes, as you know, Comic House is set up as a marketplace and database site where creators can buy and sell their comic books. But oh lordy lord, it's become more than that. What with apps being created and the Comic House anthology, which you can find so many great creators in. I had a few copies at Swindon, actually.
You're working out class, mate. I'll tell you now.
Oh, thank
you. Some of my favourite stuff I've seen of yours. Yeah,
oh, thank you.
Absolute class, yeah.
Oh, thank you, too. Very kind.
You know what,
mate? And the earlier issues have Dan Butcher.
Who's
absolutely kicking ass. So, yeah. You know, obviously Comic House have very good taste. And you can go on their website, comichouse.com, find out more about them. And also comichouse.com/app. Sign up for the app, which is essentially going to be Netflix for small press and independent comics. And how can you say no to that? You're a fool.
Yeah.
Anyone who listens to this show is clearly someone who loves discovering comics as much as we do. So
yeah. As soon as it starts, I shan't be buying your shitty comics at conventions anymore.
yes, indeed. Cutting off my nose to spite my face. No,
I just mean generally.
I mean, put it this way: we had a lovely email from Danny Abrams.
Didn't we?
Earlier this week.
Really nice.
Lots of lovely feedback, and at the end of it, she went, "P.S. I've just found out about Comic House. Holy shit!" And I don't think I think when you find out about these guys, you're in for the long haul.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. So go to comichouse.com and check them out. We'll have to get Pete from Comic House onto the show.
We do ask a good shout. Yeah. Why haven't we had him on so far? Yeah. We do. Let's get him on. Yeah. Good lad. And he's a listener as well, I think. Isn't he?
Yeah. And we'll interrogate him. We'll interrogate him.
Speaking of last week's episode, we got some lovely feedback about that. I'm so proud of Andy. Sensibly and well put his argument. I'm proud of you guys. That was such a not because of us, but mostly because of Andy. It was really interesting stuff, I have to say.
Yes. Yeah.
That was a good one. Really good.
Yes. And we must put a small shout out to the comic arts podcast, the guys from the Lakes.
Oh, they gave us a shout, didn't they?
They gave us a shout out.
Just downloaded that, actually. Yeah.
It's a great show. Absolutely great show. They talked to Pat Mills on the latest episode. So,
can you send the link to that? We'll put it on the show notes.
Yeah, it'll be on the show notes. I'll send you a link as well, Dan, because that's how generous I am.
That's how you roll. Yep.
Yeah. I'll tell you who else is generous. Our lovely listeners, when they email us. And there's several different ways you can do that. That was the weakest segue I've done in months. But I don't care. Yes, if you enjoyed this show or want to get in touch with us, let us know what you thought of it. There's several different ways you can do it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. You can get in touch with your artwork for the ACP Jam piece, which is going to be launching at London Super Comic Con, at tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And also join Awesome Comics Talk. And if you're hearing me actually pause at the moment, it's because Tony Esmond's trying to put me off on the Skype chat as I talk.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell's that noise?
Yeah, it's Tony. Whenever you hear some noise that you can't recognise and sounds a little bit sinister, it's probably Tony Esmond.
It was the first one. Was the first two are quite helpful. I will admit the third one says I have a boner, but the first two were meant to be helpful.
You're not helpful whatsoever, Tony. Oh dear. Yes, thank you for listening to us. Whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com, if you listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or the Podnose Network, thank you very much. Leave us a nice review and help get the word out.
Please do.
Yeah, thank you.
And, and thank you all for listening. Now, where can people find us on Twitter, etc., Tony?
Ezoyes on Twitter, EZOHYZ, or neveronanything.blogspot.com. Or if you go to Down the Tube, just got things going up this week. John's back from holiday. Yay, good to have you back, John. Yeah.
Amazing. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic. You caught me off guard here. And then my website is vanguardcomic.com. It's currently on hiatus, so we can read it all. It's all there.
Do you know the worst thing about that is I wrote an article, and in it I had to include Vince's website and Twitter, and I had to look it up. How bad is that? How many times have I heard it said?
Over 100 times.
Yeah.
For all those people listening, and clearly you're not Tony Esmond, you can find me on Twitter @JesterDiablo, and you can find out more about my comic at where, Tony?
The Red Mask.
Fuck you. It's theredmaskmask.com. You are an epic fail, my friend.
I know.
You can't laugh, Dan, because you because you forgot your own website just a second ago.
Fair enough. You got me there.
Thank you very much for listening, folks. Have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Yeah, check out some more European books, because as Jerome said, there's tons out there, and he's a top man. So thank you once again to Jerome as well. So yeah, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics, and as always, stay bloody awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.